Okay, everybody, thank you for coming today and welcome to the last session of Mix. It's like Mix is a three-day event. The first day with the keynotes and that I like to think of as the appetizer. The second day where we start to get down to the real meat is the main course, and today is the dessert. So, as one of the last session that we have today, one of the things we'd like to talk about is effective user interfaces and the design of effective user interfaces using WPF and Silverlight. Now, you may have learned a lot, and you may have seen a lot of information. Many of you may be designers, many of you may be developers, and one of the key themes that we've had at Mix this year was really all about having design being an effective part of your user interface. But user interfaces even go beyond that, go beyond good design. You know, design is more than just pretty pictures and gradiated buttons and curves and animations. And for your user interface to be effective, it has to be something that's adaptive to your users. It has to be something that's sticky, that has real business purpose. So we have some folks today from a company called Innotive who are going to be talking about their strategies for designing effective user interfaces and how you can, you know, take a look at some of the techniques that they have, which go beyond just using XAML into extending XAML and being able to use your extended XAML and some of the tools that are possible to build to extend XAML to be able to build these effective user interfaces. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome up Jimmy Kim, who's going to be telling us a lot more about this.
Hi, thank you for coming today. I know it's the last session, and to be honest, there's a lot more people than I expected, so I'm very happy today. Well, we're going to go through a couple of things. I just want to go over overview. I think that the key thing is that we're going to just briefly go over what we do, and I think that will give you an introduction of how we decided to extend XAML and use WPF and Silverlight as our main platform. So, a brief video of this is what we do. Can you put it? This is one. So that's a brief video of what we do. And these are some of our clients and partners. And the premise of what we go through is a little bit different from other so-called tools that we have. These are client and partners, and we realize that rather than a lot of tools are focused on authoring the content and making the content and making it more beautiful. Well, our premise started by the client needs of our common partners when they said that a lot of our clients, such as BMW and Hyundai and all these people had too many products, so many products that they couldn't put it into a showroom. And because they couldn't put it into a showroom, you know, they had no really effective way to show their products. On top of that, they spend millions of dollars making high-definition pictures, videos, brochures, spec sheets, and many, many other things. So what they needed was, they really said that we need an integrated, interactive, next-generation sales platform. Now, when I say this, is that salespeople are now flooded with information. And, you know, salespeople, the most important metrics is landing the sale, finishing the sale. So what you have to do during that time is really, you know, you can't put up a PowerPoint and you can't put up a video. It's very disparate, and it really kills the process. So what they told us is they need something much more integrated and much more interactive to really give them pizzazz. Now, like I said, so the requirement was that they really said that we need a one-source multi-use problem. Like, we spend millions of dollars taking pictures after pictures, documents after documents. I mean, it was, you know, but they didn't know which one's the most up-to-date, which one is obsolete, and which is the best picture. So they said that we need some way to really know and integrate this in a single fashion. And on top of that, they had another issue that all the content they made, well, sometimes your flash objects are just made for your web. And your brochures are just made to go, your PDF was just go to your print. And then your little mobile screen, so-called screens and everything else, were just for your mobile. So often they're really made for specific purposes. So they really couldn't be able to use this, you know, separately. Now, you see on the web, you can download a PDF and everything else, but it's not really the experience that you want the customers to have. You want a much more integrated way and be able to use it again. So we decided to really look at this really closely and provide a platform, provide a software that where you can merge all these things together on a single platform and then be able to distribute it on multiple devices. When I say multiple devices, it's publish once, access everywhere. Now, these are the two things that we did. Was the tool that I will show you right now is really based on DirectX 7. So it's an old tool, and we had our own format, like a XAML format, and we had our own player format. But I'm going to show you what we did, and we decided to do this, and we shifted over to XAML and WPF because we said that it's so much more extendable, and you can do a lot more stuff, and also it's much more cross-platform. So it really fit with our philosophy. That's why Peter, who later is going to show how we developed and a roadmap and our philosophy of our software. Another thing is that we realized that touch is becoming more of a new interface. You know, as you saw, Darren David was using the touch on his little mobile phone. You see Surface downside there. I mean, Microsoft launched the Surface, so touch is becoming more of an interface. On top of that, HP, they're also not only the tablet PCs, they just launched a 19-inch TouchMark PC, which is an all-in-one, PC with this LCD screen with a touch interface. And of course, the most famous, the iPhone. The iPhone is really, really, teaching or changing behavior of what touch and expectation should be. Now, what I have here right now, everybody's asking me that, what is this? This is an all-in-one integrated LCD. It's a 57-inch Samsung panel with has optical touch, which can support later multi-touch. It's only single touch here. And has a built-in PC in here. So it's all-in-one. It's an all-in-one PC. So even now the manufacturers, LG, Panasonic, Samsung, they're now embracing touch as a new way of integrating all these things here. So there's two trends. One is one source multi-use, and one is touch. So that's where our basis was. So with touch, we found that zoomable user interface is the most effective way. And as you know, you've seen Deep Zoom, and you've seen Surface, and you've seen all the things on the things that you can do. I mean, that is a key thing. So we integrated this in, and using zoomable interface, no longer you don't have to have a fixed resolution anymore. Usually, when you design something, it's really set for a fixed resolution. But now with a zoomable user interface, you can really be able to do less XML parsing and keep the original content, be able to view it. So not only can you view it on a big screen like this, you can be able to view it on the web, and you can view it on a mobile platform. And we found that one source multi-use, yes, but to make it even more effective, you should use a zoomable view interface, and we'll be sharing that a little later. So what we said was, what is our tool? Our tool is not a content author. We believe we're an extension or a complementary program that provides better integration based on XAML. As you know, XAML is an XML-based language where you can just really place all these multimedia objects. So why is better integration so important? Better integration is so important because it brings better presentation. And as you know, if you bring better presentation, what's the ultimate thing? The ultimate thing that you want is better metrics. And that's why we shifted our main focus with our main clients to build a sales platform presentation. Because where do you need the most presentation skills is when you land a sale. And we're very happy to say many of our systems using our software were able to bring better metrics and are now deployed very widely, mostly in Asia and solely in the United States. But that was a basic premise. Now, I just want to go into what is Jimmy talking about. This is all great. So I'm going to show you a demo, what we made for Infinity in Korea. It's D, right? What we did for Infinity in Korea. As you know, Infinity was launching last. Lexus came in with a big hit, BMW and everything else. So Infinity came into Korea and they said that, you know what, we need to really be able to present ourselves better. And the only thing they had was a room this big to display one car. And they chose the M. But they said, what happens if people want a G? What happens if people want a Q or an FX? So they said, we need to show something. And yes, they had stacks of brochure where people can pass off the brochures and everything else, but they came to us, and then this is what we designed. And let me tell you this, all of this is none of this is our authoring tool. We just integrated the content that they already had. So this took at least, this just took just 1 week to make. And people say it's beautiful, you know, how do you make it? But it really is just reusing, one source recycling, one source multi-use of the content that they already had. Now, this is an interface that we made with Flash. We custom made this, but everything else was just for them. So what they did was, you know, they wanted to make a minority port thing, so we integrated it in, gave it a touch thing. I said, what did you want to do? Said, well, usually in our sales presentation, what we do is we take out our little scrapbook and tell you how great our car is. So he said, wait a minute, we'll take those PDF files and we'll embed it in here. And with the Zoomable interface on the single canvas, they will be able to show this. And then you can see, you know, now the pointer's here. So what else do you do, we ask? Well, then we kind of go through our basic Infinity brochure. So this is the same PDF file outputted by Quark before they went to the printers. And all we did was we exported it here and we input it in here. And we just, our layout was that instead of a linear PowerPoint fashion flipping thing, that we made it in a mosaic fashion, which is very similar to what you see in DeepSoon. So people can just say, look, I really want to go to the page that I want to. And remember, we're able to zoom in, zoom out all of these content because when the customers already made the content, it was already in high res. When you go to Flickr and everything else, remember, it doesn't matter if you have a 10 megapixel thing, it downsizes it. But when you go to printers and everything else, when they take the pictures, they take in high resolution. Everything's high resolution, but there's no really way to leverage it. Now, all we do is we embed it in and we show the original quality of the content. On top of that, they said that what we want to show the Infinity is, you know, we have some cool commercials. So we want to show the commercial. So what we did,
the all-new M is here from Infinity.
And then they said that the sales process is they look at a person and say, I want, you know, I think this person is really an M kind of guy. So let's switch to the M. So this picture was the original Infinity billboard picture. It's a 300 megabyte file. So it was made for those big billboards. And what they did was, all they did was they laid out the M content inside here. So here, once again, they put the videos.
Exclusive rear wheel.
And then they're able to put their high resolution pictures. And this, usually a picture of this wishbone was only this big, right, on your brochure. It's only this big because if you put it even higher, it's more pages. And more pages means more cost. But it doesn't matter what the size is when it goes into the brochure, it really is in this high quality. So the salespeople liked it because now they can zoom in, really tell a better story. Rather than scrunching down on the brochure and trying to circle it out over, they said, this is a better way. On top of that, we took out their web object from their website. Like I said, none of it is really minimum work. All the content they had was already there. And all we did was integrate it in and repurpose it. And now, because you have a zoomable interface, unlike kiosk systems, you're kind of locked into that format. You know, once you make it for a kiosk, you really can't run it anywhere else. But because this is window-based and everything else, not only salespeople take this and do a presentation here, they use an HP PC, or they use a tablet PC to go out and present this. So this is where we started. This is our first version of our program, in the sense that we had a similar structure to XAML and Silverlight and WPF Flare. So what we did was, when we looked at XAML and WPF, we said that, you know, it's so much more extendable, it's so much more cross-platform, it really fits our thing, can play on other things, so let's port our next generation software on WPF and XAML. And that was what Peter will show you in a bit. But since this is part of effective UI, we thought that it would be very, very good that Albert, our creative director, who made this. And our clients include the companies that you have, but everything that we had, the layout and the know-how that we had was really Albert's that he did, that he presented. So Albert's going to come up right now and briefly go over what is effective UI in touch and effective UI in the Zoomable User Interface.
Hi. I'd like to discuss effective user interfaces in the context of touchscreen interfaces. Oops. And we're going to show you, I'm also going to show you a few custom applications that we developed to use in our design process to help refine content and make better user experiences for our clients and our audiences. So the typical form factor that we usually work with within our company is 32-inch PDP LCD screens to 150-inch rear projection glass touch screens. And we've been designing content for touch screens for about 4 years now. And when we started, we just dived in, and we had no idea what we were doing. And during the 4 years up to this point, we pretty much made all of the mistakes that you can make when designing for touch. And so I just want to share some of those experiences with you. So if any of you guys are interested in designing touch, or you're already into designing touch, you could probably understand what I'm talking about. So what do you think the worst thing that could happen once you design a touch interface content could be? The absolute worst thing that could happen is you spend months designing something really nice, and you have it installed, and no one touches it. They just walk by, and they don't even realize that it's touchscreen. And we actually ran into this problem a few times when we first designed our projects, because a lot of us were from web backgrounds and graphic design backgrounds. And we didn't realize that the typical mentality of people when they see large, especially screens that are just shaped like TVs, LCDs, that we're sort of accustomed to filtering stuff out. We just assume that it's an advertisement for a show, or it's an announcement, because you see a lot of these monitors in airports and whatnot. So that was the biggest problem that we ran into. And the second problem was when people noticed your screen, they look at your screen and they're like, that does look like you could touch it. But a lot of us, you know, when we grow up, we're not allowed to touch the expensive equipment at home, and especially we don't want to put fingerprints on our monitors. So a lot of people, when they see a screen that's touch-enabled, they'll be wondering if they're even allowed to touch the screen. And thirdly, when we're using large touch screens that are 32 inches and beyond, people start becoming self-conscious about the people around them, because especially if you're working on like a 100-inch screen, everyone around you is looking at what you're doing. So actually, the first time that we did a big project, it was for a vehicle launch in a mortar show, and no one would go and touch the content. So what we did was we hired a student to go there every 3 minutes and touch the screen. And that actually broke down the three barriers that I was talking about. First, people realized it was a touch screen, and the permission thing, they knew they were allowed to touch it because someone else was touching it. And the self-consciousness went away because someone else was already doing it. And so they sort of followed along. Every time the guy we hired to touch the screen interacted with it, they were like, oh, cool, it looks like Minority Report or whatever, and then they would go. And when the traffic sort of died down, people would stop touching it again. So needless to say, that was really frustrating. So we started developing certain visual indicators that this was touchscreen and whatnot. So let me show you a few things, a few examples. Unfortunately, the most effective indicator that something is touchable is the most analog method, and that's literally a sign beside the touchscreen that says like touch me or touch the screen or something like that. But as a designer, like, we don't want to do that. Oftentimes clients would ask us to design a huge sticker to stick onto their LCD screens or whatever, and you know, that never looked pretty. So this is an example of a project we put in a Nike Golf clothing store. And if we see here, we had this go button animated, and the designers thought this was enough to attract enough attention so that people would look at it and realize that it's a touchscreen. But we got a call from, we kept getting calls from the salespeople in this store saying that it's really annoying because people come up to the salespeople and ask if they could touch this screen. And obviously they could touch it, so they asked us to make another indicator encouraging people to touch the screen. So all we did was add a little animation like this. It's very simple. It says it's in Korean. What it says is, this is a touch screen, so feel free to touch the screen. And that was the last time we heard from the salespeople. Now, this is an example of sort of a failed fix that we did. This was a pilot project for National Amusements, a Cygames game room that they were trying to develop. The project, or the effect that this the thing had was this thing was rotating, and we assumed that if this was rotating, people will want to click it. But we went on site, and everyone was just walking by this thing, not even paying attention. Maybe it had something to do with the design also. But so we got a request to put in a touch indicator. And since we didn't want to put in something really like huge and ugly, we decided to just make this really small animation here. One sec, sorry. Oops. So I mean, we made this tiny animation that told you how to interact with the screen. And we put it in the center of the screen here. And what happened was, this actually made a few more people stop and look at the screen. But what they did was they just started clicking this area right here. And we didn't give any actions to this area, so obviously nothing happened. So they're just clicking this, and they're like, what the heck? And they just walk away. And so that was an example of a failed indicator for encouraging touch interaction. One thing that we noticed also when dealing with large touch screens was you have to really take into consideration the distance of the user from the screen, especially when it's a large screen. A lot of content that we make is like video catalog content where people choose from a menu and the video pops up full screen. And oftentimes clients have all of these HD videos and they want to show it full screen on like a 80-inch to 100-inch screen. But we always say, like, don't think of doing that, because imagine you're in front of a 80-inch screen that's this big and your interaction distance is going to be arm's length. And you click a video and the video will open up like this and you have to walk back, take a look at it, and then go back and forth to choose and pick your videos. And that's a very inefficient way of, you know, making your touch interfaces. So just because you have high definition video and a large screen, it doesn't mean that you should always be showing it full screen. And oftentimes the clients aren't very happy when they see the end result, because you're clicking a video and it pops up just this big, and they're like, why are you wasting all this screen space? But in reality, that's the most effective size for the viewer. And let me play this video for a second here. This is a photo booth application that we had in a theater where you could superimpose your face onto movie posters. And you'll see this picture button here. And first, the next couple, if you watch them, they're just standing there waiting for the photo to be taken because they didn't have a friend to press the photo for them. And then at the end, he realizes that, oh, okay, I guess there's a button here. And while he's doing that, he was like trying to fit his face into the thing. But while he's doing that, it sort of went out of frame. And those are kind of things that we have to take into consideration when designing for touch. So this is our second version of the photo booth that we installed. This is just a screen capture. So we added a animation of a finger actually going to the button on each frame, and this actually got rid of all of the issues that we had. So it's really a matter of coming up with really simple animations. I mean, that the thing we had for Nike Golf, that's not groundbreaking or anything, but oftentimes, and still personally too, I don't really like being forced to put in these kind of indicators, but if no one's going to use your content without it, then it's much better trying to come up with more visual and creative ideas to encourage people to touch your screens. So a few more things that you have to take into consideration. When we're talking about mainstream touch technology that's actually affordable and mass deployable, there's no scroll wheel, there's no right click, and there's no rollovers. And out of these interactions, the most painful one to part with is rollovers, because, you know, on the web, when you roll over, you get tooltips, you could interact in so many different ways with this. But literally, we're limited to just clicking, and you'll have to think of different ways to achieve rollover effects and whatnot. And dragging, we love having drag in our content. The content that Jimmy showed you earlier, the client wanted something that looked Minority Report-ish, and just for reference, that was made 2 years ago. So back then, it looked pretty cool. And so we just added a simple dragging motion, and the client was happy, because when the salespeople, dragged the letters around and it went into the target area, the customers would be, oh, that looks so cool, that's so high tech. But then we got a call about a week later from the salespeople saying, can you make the letters snap to the target area even though we release it from a certain distance, because it's getting really annoying dragging this every time we want to show people. And so, okay, we added that. And then we get another call a week later saying, we don't want to drag anymore. Can you just make the icons double clickable? And so we ended up adding that. And those are things to take into consideration. Just the wow effect when third person sees people dragging things, panning around, it's really cool. But in the end, when a user uses it a lot, like, do we really want them to, especially on imagine a 100-inch screen, you have to drag one thing from here to here, release it, and move things around. That's, it's sort of expecting a lot from the user. So I want to share a few tools that we created for optimizing the user experience on touch. The first tool I want to show you is a button tool. This was actually made in Flash by one of our Flash programmers. It was made in about 40 minutes. And it's not pretty. Let me just show you. Is it D? Okay. Like I said, it's not pretty. But all this does is we input a button size, a pixel size that the designer wants to work with. I mean, 50 is already pretty big. And then we place them in an area that we think the navigation will go to. Then we just get people to come over and try clicking the buttons. And usually, the designers want to work with a pixel size around 35, because it's nice and compact. It's not intrusive. But once you start working with sizes like this, you start getting a lot more errors. And so we use a tool like this to optimize button sizes for different screens, different screen sizes. And the next tool I want to show you is a little comprehensive. It's a log analysis tool that we developed in C#, and it was actually originally created for clients to analyze how their customers were using their touch solutions. But us designers, we got a hold of it to actually test different UIs and reorganize content based on how people were using the content. So let me just switch over to this tool. We thought of a really creative name for the program, Innovative Log Analysis Tool. Now let me show you what one of our logs look like. If I could find it. The log files are generated by date in our software, and it basically tracks what files are being opened, where people are zooming in, where people are panning, the coordinates, what they're clicking on, the name of the objects they're clicking on, and it tracks all of this stuff. I don't know why a lot of this stuff is repeated, but logs like this are generated, and then we go into this tool, and this analyzes the log for us. And if we go into page analysis, it will tell us how many times this page was viewed, for how long, the duration in seconds. We get interesting statistics like this, but what's actually important to the designer is the visual log analysis. So from here, we could see what people are actually accessing and what people aren't interested in at all. So actually, Jimmy showed you the brochure, but all of the companies have like really nice brochures and they want to put it into a digital format. But in all honesty, people don't look at the brochure, and it's really difficult for us to fend that off. Like, they're like, we're paying you a lot of money, so put this brochure in for us. And then we have to go to them with this log tool in our previous projects, in our prior projects, saying, look, no one's interested in a brochure on a new media interactive content. And so we use this kind of thing to optimize user interface and optimize the layout of content and what content needs to be filtered. Then we could go one depth further and take a look at what objects are being clicked. For example, this rectangle is the M rectangle. So that would mean a lot of people are interested in the M when they're viewing this page. We could go into session analysis. And again, this tab is the important tab for the clients. And these two tabs are what the designers use to optimize their design. And sequence analysis, this is also interesting for designers too, because it sort of shows the flow of how people navigate through your pages. This is probably not something new to you guys. So we can get an idea of the flow of the navigation of users. Oops. Oh, that's in Korean. That means I'm running out of time and I should wrap up here. So you could look it up. I'm serious. Okay, I'm gonna pass it on to Peter. I just wanted to go over some brief things that we learned working with touch interfaces, and I hope that helped you. All right, Peter.
All right, thank you, Albert.
Peter's gonna set a camera up right now. So just to recap. Right now, we believe that we have a methodology that we have is called ACE. It's called Analyze, Construct, and Evaluate. It's a circle thing because we believe that in any design that you have to really design for the salesperson, we really thought that we have to balance between coolness and functionality. The sweet spot is very, you know, designers want cool, and usually the people want practical. And if it goes too practical, it becomes too boring. If it becomes too cool, it becomes unusable. So that the key thing is we're always finding that balance between that. And as you know, so that's how we hope that it's useful for you if you're going to design for touch or make touch applications, what you heard today. Now, Peter right now is going to show that the next generation of our software. Everything right now was done with our old version of our software. Now, as you said, that to recap, we had a similar structure to XAML and a similar structure of a player. But we looked at the WPF and the whole architecture, and we said, wow, this is really extendable. And with this architecture, we can do a lot of stuff and really build a platform. Now, Peter's going to come up and explain our rationale for our next generation of software.
Sorry, I had to set up the camera. It came at the very last minute. I'm just tweaking it right now. I'm going to talk about extending XAML for the rest of the session. And then when we usually talk about extending XAML, it means you're creating programming, custom controls using Visual Studio, and coming up with custom tags for XAML. This is true for our case as well. But what we did was we extended a little bit further, and then we came up with a platform that includes application tools like in the form of editor and player, and also some APIs to extend this even further, and then build back-end solutions. You could think of editor as kind of the extension of Blend. We're building custom controls to extend the capabilities, and the player also to extend Silverlight and maybe WPF for specific vertical markets. So these kind of configuration with editor and player and the platform itself allows you to build product that's very focused and tailors toward vertical markets. And the example Jimmy and Albert was showing you before for the sales tool platform, the backend solutions using these APIs in the platform, we build content management, content distribution, display management, and you also saw the log analysis tools. And these are really important enterprise-level services and server solutions, and it becomes a really cool product. And also, this we're calling this editor-player kind of approach, and this approach is, you could apply this to every kind of vertical market where there's like a very specific niche market that needs special functionalities. And after the sales tool platform, we had a chance to actually work on the surveillance market. And the next product is also following this editor player. And it's extending to the backend solution as well. OK, so why extend XAML? Obviously, when you're working with specific vertical markets, there's functionalities that needs, which is not covered in XAML, and then it gives you extensions to build. And ultimately, with those extensions, you're building a product that is providing convenience or performance or efficiency to the customer. So in the case of InnoWatch is the product that we built, and it's for the CCTV control room applications. And it had four major functionalities that we built using custom controls. And these were extensions of XAMLs. Those are device supports, multimedia, multiple display supports, zoomable user interface platforms, and a lot of actions and templates along with these major components. And then together with these, the capability of easy authoring and operation that's coming from the editor tool and the player tool, you eventually come up with fast implementation, easy maintenance, and great user interface for building CCTV control room application. Okay. I'm going to try and show you what I mean by extending XAML using the tools we have. And then I'm going to put in a camera just to show you what we did. Okay, this is an editor program. And what I'm going to do is quickly create a project. Oh, I need a keyboard. I'm right now setting the layout size. Okay, I'm gonna add a little map here. Oops. To the layout. And try and create a control room that shows, let's see, what do I have? Okay. Okay, this little area. And then I'm going to place some CCTV cameras. One over here. Okay, first add a camera. Add another one. Then, since I only have one camera right now, I'll just use the same one. Notice this is a zoomable map, and it's kind of simulating airport area, and we're trying to put in CCTV cameras to have a better user interface for locating the cameras. I'll go ahead and save this. I'll save this as a... Okay. And then use a player to load it up. Probably did something wrong before. I think there's a bug in here. It's not working correctly. I'll go to another one. Okay, I think there's a little problem, and as the Murphy's Law is, it's not working out correctly always. I'll just show you a XAML file. Where is it?
Andy, can you come up? So, sorry for the technical difficulties. I think that we'll just go through the XAML right now. And show you. So the key thing is that why did we extend XAML? Because it's really easy. As you can see here, the XAML, why did we extend XAML? Because it's the most easiest thing there. It's only one line. So the reason why we extended XAML was it's only one camera, and it's a very simple code, and now we're able to extend XAML. Second thing is, so the key architecture that we were going with was we didn't want to make a separate program that did expression blend. We made a program that actually can go back and forth of expression and blend with our editor. So this is a video showing that thing. So right now, the cameras are here, and they're adding the camera layout right now, and it's switching to blend and designating the actions right now. So the camera, so when it clicks, it's telling that when it clicks, I want it to go up, and I want it to expand like that. So now it's defining the properties. So after that, we do it. That's how it's extended there. That's that's what we want. So we're going back and forth. So it's really, you know, we built it to be a seamless application. So once you define it in Blend like that, we extend it into the editor, and now you can see in the editor it's doing the same actions.
So typically the developer designer workflow works between Blend and Visual Studio, with XAML being the glue.
Yeah.
But of course, as we saw earlier on with some of the explanations, that you know, for going into a vertical market such as CCTV, the facility to extend XAML and pump those extensions back into the Blend tool is something that can be very, very powerful to make to grease the wheels of the designer developer process.
Yeah. So once again, we believe that there's two really things that we really want to use was to extend XAML and keep up the XAML interface. No. Did you see for the CCT application that by having a XAML interface, you were able to zoom in, zoom out, and have an intuitive read of the thing. So our next generation that we're building is based on Windows Presentation Foundation, Servolite, and Windows Mobile. So I'm going to skip the demo because I think that Peter was the one doing it. I really apologize to really make it. We've been working on this for like 3 days and trying to make this win. And yesterday when we rehearsed it, it was perfect. But it's always Murphy's Law. So but the key thing is that we're going to release this tool at the end of June. So it's the editor and player platform. And then we're going to release it for people who want to have a more easier way to extend XAML. And all the APIs are there and everything else. And so we're going to continue with our clients here that we did with CCTV, with our sales presentation platform. And luckily, we have major security companies who want to use this as their SDK to extend XAML and build a whole product suite. So I think that's pretty much it of our presentation today. Once again, I really apologize for the scare. But I hope that that you were able to take some things away. Now, if there's any questions, I'll be very happy to answer to my best ability.